Thanks very much, Tim. I look at that kiln being built, and it makes my pizza oven that I built last summer in the backyard really pretty poor. I didn't do any data management on it, so I just know it takes a lot of wood to get it warm. So that brings us to the last presentation before the Q&A, when you get to grill. Is that maybe not a right term for people who are working in the ceramic industry, but to ask questions of the presenters. Our final presentation is one that takes us back across the Pennines, back close to where I come from. You won't believe it, I actually come from Glossop in Derbyshire. The accent's maybe a giveaway. Our final presentation of the afternoon is by Richard Holden from ESSA Energy Transitions. Again, I wish they had made the printing a little bit bigger. And it's on the project to build the HPP1 low carbon hydrogen plant at ESSA. Richard.
Thank you, Roy. And good afternoon, everyone. Yes, my name's Richard Holden. I'm from SR Energy Transition Hydrogen. And I'm here this afternoon to give you a view on what we're doing over the hills on the other side of the country. We have a blue hydrogen plant, CCUS-enabled hydrogen plant, 350 megawatts of capacity that we have taken all the way through, and it is now really close to final investment decision, which we will take hopefully later on this year. And it's fantastic to be able to be here today and talk in collaboration and continue this collaboration between the different clusters that have been producing these projects. You've heard this morning about some of the clusters that are a lot closer to where we are today. I'll give you that view of what we're up to, and picked a couple of specific elements that I'm going to try and talk to you about to give you a flavour of some of the issues that we've had on our road to final investment decision. So we're going to talk about financing, and we're going to talk about our build strategy. Simple as that. Little bit of context to start off with. What is our vision? Our vision in SR Energy Transition EET Hydrogen is that we see low carbon hydrogen playing a huge part of a role in the UK's energy markets going forwards. We are very focused on the industrial sector, as you've heard earlier on today, focusing on those initially and then broadening out into other sectors later on. Where's that hydrogen coming from? We think that it's small green projects, local to users, will be first to come up and start running, followed very closely behind by the big blue projects, and then as we move into the 2030s, green will catch up in terms of scalability. But if you want that scale, that level of hydrogen that will support the infrastructure that you need to do large at-scale blue projects this decade. And so our mission as part of that is to be, as it says there, the leading low-carbon hydrogen producer in the UK, and I'm sure that all of the other companies that have presented today will share that mission as well. So just to give you a quick bit of context, that 350 megawatts low-carbon hydrogen plant is located in the centre of the HyNet cluster on the northwest coast of the UK, and we have a number of advantages as shown here on the map. We have the infrastructure that we need. So we have large amounts of storage for our carbon dioxide in depleted gas fields out just off the coast, out in Liverpool Bay, very close to shore. That is owned and operated by Eni. We have a hydrogen storage capability on the other side of the cluster, in salt caverns that will be solution mined by INEOS, and then connecting us to our users will be Cadent's hydrogen pipeline network. and they're all coming together in that HiNet alliance to supply the users, and you can see those users on the left-hand side there that really are demanding that hydrogen now or as soon as possible. I loved the quote from this morning about needing to embrace decarbonisation, otherwise, you know, you can just all goes. So the two elements that I'll be talking to today are the financing arrangements and then buildability. The first element on the financing side, let's talk about that. We will be regulated through the Low Carbon Hydrogen Agreement, and that will take the form of a contract for difference mechanism. It was born and rolled out really successfully in the wind industry, and it's a revenue funding mechanism. So what happens is you sum up all of your costs, add on a rate of return, and that gives you an agreed strike price. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to realize that strike price for hydrogen at this point in time. There is no market. So as you sell that hydrogen, you'll be able to realize a lesser price that will be benchmarked against its competitor, natural gas, which, by the way, is a feedstock of blue hydrogen. So your costs are always going to be higher. And government steps in and pays that difference. And then over time, as the market matures, you can realize a better price for your hydrogen. That difference shrinks, and government is gradually able to step away from the funding mechanism. The Low Carbon Hydrogen Agreement will be between ourselves and the Low Carbon Contracts Company, which is the executive arm of DESNZ in this case. So in terms of our financial overview, we are aiming for very robust financial performance, which will be underpinned by that CFD structure. We're targeting a classic project finance structure, so 70% debt leverage from a core group of banks, which we will have the flexibility to choose. And we're working through that process, that financing process at the moment. As we go through, we are getting subjected to, as you can expect, a very high degree of due diligence that is ongoing at the moment, targeting technical, market, legal, as it says there, environmental and social, as well as due diligence coming from government itself. So it's a very busy time for us. But it's also great feedback to get these external perspectives on our project. And we are supported through those processes by our own advisors in those various different sectors. So it's a very interesting time for us at the moment. When you talk to financiers, they will always want to know, where's the risk? So I put up some of those risks and also some of the opportunities that we see within this sector. First question you always get, technology. It's first of a kind, right? Well, no. What we have here is proven technology at scale. Johnson Matthey's ATR, autothermal reformer technology, is based in the ammonia industry, which is decades of proven service at scale. So couple that, literally bolted onto the back end carbon capture plant is BASF's amine-based carbon capture technology. There are hundreds of reference plants all over the world to look at. The only thing that's novel here is bolting those two technologies together. So you can argue about technology readiness levels if you want to, but fundamentally these plants are out there, just not in the same place at the moment. The second risk is nascent market. There is no hydrogen market at the moment. It's as simple as that. So you mitigate that by having the help of government with its CFD mechanism, with its low carbon hydrogen standard that gives those blue ticks on every one of those hydrogen molecules that allows you to lock in that return. And then you guarantee your volume by, in our case, having an anchor customer, a refinery right next door, and I'll show you where that is in a minute. The final risk that I've put up here, and there are a lot more, but another one to talk about is the UK EPC market itself. Now, a contract for difference mechanism in a nascent market, you don't get a lot of upside potential on your return. So you have to absolutely minimize your downside risks and couple that to the fact that there's no reopeners within that contract. You need to have a high degree of cost certainty, even higher than any other project of this size. Another problem that we've had is extended bid validities at a time when the EPC market is offering bid validities sometimes in weeks, let alone months. But we're talking to government over an extended period of months. That's been extremely difficult to square, coupled with that cost certainty, which the UK EPC market traditionally is very reluctant to give and getting more reluctant to give. So that has been two very difficult points for us to negotiate. We have managed to negotiate those two points successfully, I'm pleased to say, but it has been a difficult road to get there. On the opportunities side, we are a first mover in the hydrogen space, and that has enabled us to capitalise on this growth in responsible investing that we see coming through the markets. So that's been and that's real. We're getting that feedback from the market. That really is out there. We have a very positive response from the finance market when we've gone out to them. We've also been able to lock in our utility supply. Our electrical connection is happening this decade. There are a lot of projects out there that didn't quite get there at the same time as us that are now looking at electrical connections well into the 2030s. And that's a problem, a really big problem for rollout of hydrogen that the government really needs to address very quickly. I know discussions are happening. That solution needs to be put in place. Hydrogen itself is an opportunity. That clean fuel decarbonises the industrial sector, secures the jobs, secures the business within the region, and also provides that firm basis for companies to think about growth within the region as well. Really important. Let's talk about the second point, construction side of things. So you can see this is a map of Stanlow Manufacturing Complex, and our site is located in one corner of what is a huge complex, and it's got a refinery right next to it. That refinery produces a huge amount of grey hydrogen right now, and it's owned by SR as well. So we have decades of experience of operating, of transporting, of using hydrogen safely and efficiently and in an optimised fashion. So we already know how to do this. That refinery will provide that anchor offtake, that volume of demands that we need to get going, and that's really important for us and our financial investors as well. And they will also supply a lot of the feedstocks into the plant. The refinery and SR has also got a lot of experience on the consenting side. Consenting has been a problem for us, I will say that. Really extended timelines for consenting, and all projects should be very aware of this. It has taken a lot longer than the statutory periods to get those consents in place. We have them now, but it's taken a while. Even with our experience as an upper-tier coma site with an EPR permit, with hazardous substance consent already in place, and the competent authorities already knowing us, even so, it's taken a long time. So a couple of points on our construction strategy just to pull out. The first one is modularization. Gone are the days where you stick build a massive process plant and you take all the materials to site and construct it there. We are looking to use much larger module yards where they have absolutely massive warehouses, and they can really control the construction environment. So gone are the days where your heavy lift will be delayed by 2 days because of a large storm blowing through. You don't need to do that anymore. They have huge construction and transportation capability. They can, these yards are capable of producing up to 10,000 ton modules. Now, we're not going to be getting close to that, but it's great to know that that capability, that capacity is there for us, and it demonstrates their competence and capability. And it's all supported by a supply chain that is right there. It's SAP enabled, it's very optimized, very close to the work front as well. So all of that leads to an improved cost and schedule certainty. It won't reduce your costs and it won't reduce your schedule, but it will give you a far better degree of certainty. And that, as you may remember from the financing piece, was something that was very important to us. The second point I'll pull out is about interface management. There are a lot of interfaces on this project. So we plan to work very much in partnership with our preferred EPC contractor to manage all of these interfaces and key stakeholders. To give you a flavor of a few of them, if we go back to this map and zoom in a little bit, as well as the core plant, we will have an air separation unit that's built by a different company. We will have an electrical connection that is built by Scottish Power. We'll have a water connection that's built by United Utilities. We'll have above ground installations for pipelines that are constructed by Eni and by Cadent. We'll have other major projects happening at the same time as we transform standalone manufacturing complex for the future. So we have a hydrogen power project that's going to use the hydrogen. We have HPP2 itself, the second phase of the plant, which is coming hot on the heels on the first and is a lot bigger. And don't forget that existing refinery that's out there just next door as well. Massive operation, especially during a maintenance turnaround, and we cannot derail their operations or their maintenance. Our communities around us are really important to us. We need to engage with them, we need to keep them on side. When we have engaged with them, they've been extremely supportive of what we're doing. They understand, they get this. But having said that, they are very interested in how we're going to manage noise, how we're going to manage construction traffic during all of these projects that are taking place. Starting to look a very busy slide. That's just a few of them. We've identified 21 other key interfaces that we will need to manage, and 57 key stakeholders. So we have to have a very targeted plan to deal with and manage and bring together all of those interfaces, all of those stakeholders, in order to succeed in our projects